I don't know about you, I sometimes have a very short attention span. I can concentrate on something, and after a while, my mind starts to wander. And I have to do something else, and then come back to it. I'm afraid my sermon's a bit like that this morning. It's not one long sermon. It's sort of broken down. And I'm going to ask three questions this morning. That we look for answers for. The first question is, who do we look to? Who do we look to? Now, we recently had the World Cup in, where, Jimson? Brazil. Now, can you remember in the opening sequence, what was the one thing that stood out? Can you remember seeing something very large on top of a hill? All right, does anybody know what his other name is? It's called Christ the Redeemer. Very large statue, stands about 30 metres high. The span of Jesus' arms is about 28 metres. It can be seen from anywhere in Rio de Janeiro. No matter where you are, you can look up and see this. And one of the Psalms, Psalm 121, says this. We probably know most of it. It says, I look to the hills, where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord. He is the maker of heaven and earth. We know that. I'm going to read it from a slightly different version, which I think just expresses it in such a wonderful way. I look up the vast size of the mountains from where my help come in time of trouble. The eternal creator of heaven and earth and these mountains will send the help I need. He holds you firmly in place. He will not let you fall. He who keeps you will never take his eyes off you and never drift off to sleep. What a relief. The one who watches over Israel never leaves for rest or sleep. The eternal keeps you safe, so close to him that his shadow is a cooling shade to you. Neither bright light of sun nor dim light of moon will harm you. The eternal will keep you safe from all life's evils, from the first breath to the last breath you breathe, from this day and forever. And I just, when I read that, I thought, what a reassurance that the God who created this whole world, this whole universe, is so caring about me that this is his promises. These are his promises to me today. He will hold you firmly in place. He will not let you fall. He keeps you. He never takes his eyes off you. And I found this quite amusing. He never drifts into sleep. I had the image of sort of God going to sleep, but he doesn't. He never sleeps. He's always watching over, no matter where you are, no matter what you're doing. He's there. He's there looking after you. But why does it say look to the hills? Well, the explanation is in the fact that he's the creator. If you're trying to explain, you know, why you believe in God to somebody, and they say, well, I don't really believe there's a God. Point to creation. Now, I have problems with, I'm not going to get into the creation theory here. I do apologize, it looks like I'm going that way. I am not. Where people say there was this almighty bang, and from that came everything we have now. To me, somehow that just doesn't seem logical. And I'm going to need the help from the audience. Jimson. Jimson knows I always call him. Right. Would you say you're intelligent?
I don't know.
You don't know? Well, I think you are. Do you think things through? Or do you just accept things as, yes, that's it? Or do you think, well, I'd rather think that through and you know, see if that really is logical, see if it works? Yes, I'm going to say that. Right. I'm going to tell you something, and I want you to see if you believe me. Okay? I went to bed last night, and during the night, I heard a slight sound on my bedside table. When I woke up this morning, I found this watch by the side of it. Now, just take the watch, don't drop it, please. Would you say it's a good watch?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Is it working?
Yes.
Yes? How can you tell?
Because
the second hand's going round. Now, if I said that watch just appeared, would you believe me?
No.
Why?
Something has to move it.
Somebody had to
push it.
Move
it.
Make
it.
Make it. Oh, I'm glad you came up with that one, Jane. Right. Thanks, Simpson. Got the brightest one, haven't you? We had a lady. Well, thank you anyway. Somebody had to make it. It just seems to me illogical. Now, I'm not disputing there could have been a Big Bang right at the beginning. And from that, everything else developed. Not disputing that. But the fact that somebody just says there was a Big Bang and nobody is in control, to me, it just doesn't seem logical. I just can't figure that one out. I much prefer the idea that somebody is controlling it, and that somebody is God. He's controlling the whole of the universe, making sure it doesn't bounce off all over the place. It's not moving where it shouldn't be. It's being controlled, and he's in control. And to me, that seems so much more logical. Who do we look to when we're in trouble? When we feel as though things aren't right? We look to God. I don't know about you, but I remember when I used to come home from school, and I used to walk through the door, the thing that always comforted me was the smell of my mum's cooking. You could always tell what she'd been baking, you could always tell what she'd been cooking. And as you walked through that door and you'd had a day at school and you thought, I've got homework to do and I've got this and I've got that. But then the smell of your mum's cooking, it was what they call comfort food. And it really was comfort food. And in some ways, I find this psalm my comfort food. Because when I read it, I feel God's there. He's holding me. He's trusting me. And that's what the psalm says. Okay? And it uses the phrase at the end in verse 8, forevermore. Now, the phrase forevermore literally means perpetual, always, eternally. So the comfort we have is that it's not just now. It's not just while we're here now that God is looking after us. Eternally, when we go to be with him, he'll be there looking after us. So when we're in times of trouble, when we have doubts, when we have fears, who do we look to? We look to the hills. We look to God, because he is the one who cares for us. Second question, who do we trust? I kept thinking about this question. I thought, well, there's different ways you can ask this. Who do we trust in? How do we trust? What level do we trust at? And we trust every day in different ways. I mean, a simple example is I'm trusting this chair is going to hold me up. If it doesn't, I don't know what's going to happen. I trust you're all listening. I can't see anybody falling asleep yet. We have friends that we rely on, that we trust. People that we can go to. Family. We trust them. We trust them at different levels. There's some people we trust more than others. But what about how we trust God? At what level do we trust God? Now, we trusted God for our salvation. He gave us that. He offered it to us. We accepted it. We trusted him. He's going to save us. He has saved us. And we praise the Lord for that. But that's fine as long as things are going well. What you might call your comfort zone. You feel life's fine. Things are going on. But what happens when things start going wrong? When somehow you feel that shouldn't be happening. That doesn't feel right. There was and this is dating me, going back to the early 60s, I don't know how many people remember this, there was a program on TV called One Step Beyond. It was a science fiction programme sort of thing. It wasn't science fiction stories. What they did, they took things that seemed unusual and they made a story out of it, but they never gave you an answer. It was for you to try and figure it out. And what I think we need to look at sometimes is, with God, we need to go that one step beyond. When we can't figure it out, but we've got to trust him for it. That what is happening, God is in charge of. Now, I'm going to try and give you a very potted history of Job. If you ever get a chance to read through Job, then please do. It seems it's long and some of it is heavy going. But if you can get a good commentary with it and it will explain it, it's well worth reading. And Job was a man who had everything. It says in the opening, "In the land of Uz, there lived a man whose name was Job. This man was blameless and upright. He feared God and he shunned evil. He had 7 sons, 3 daughters. He owned 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 donkeys, had a large number of servants. He was the greatest man among all the people of the East." I suppose we class him as millionaire, billionaire, I don't know. He was really very well settled. Everything seemed to be going fine for Job. And Satan was having a conversation with God. And he said, "What happens if I test Job? Do you think he will still trust you?" And God said, "You can do whatever you like, but you can't harm Job. You can't physically kill him. But anything else, you can do." And he did. If you read through what actually happened, I was reading through it again yesterday, and I thought, if this was a soap story, they'd say it was unbelievable. You know, it just couldn't happen. It says, "One day, Job's sons and daughters were feasting and drinking wine at the oldest brother's house. A messenger came to Job and said, 'The oxen were ploughing and the donkeys were grazing nearby. Sabaeans attacked and made off with them. They put the servants to the sword, and I'm the only one who's escaped to tell you.' And while he was still speaking, another messenger came and said, 'The fire of God fell from the heavens and burned up the sheep and the servants, and I'm the only one who's escaped to tell you.' And while he was still speaking, another messenger came and said, 'The Chaldeans formed 3 raiding parties and swept down on your camels and made off with them. They put the servants to the sword, and I'm the only one who escaped to tell you.' And finally, while he was still speaking, yet another messenger came and said, 'Your sons and daughters were feasting and drinking wine at the oldest brother's house when suddenly a mighty wind swept in from the deserts and struck the 4 corners of the house. It collapsed on them and they're dead. And I'm the only one who's escaped to tell you.'" So from having everything, he was left with nothing apart from himself. And then what happened? He was inflicted with sores and boils which made him so horrible to look at that even his closest friends departed, save 3. Nobody would look at him. He really, really was taken to the depths. His 3 friends came along and each of them offered a reason why this had happened. "It was your fault. You must have sinned somewhere." And Job said, "I haven't sinned. I haven't. Can't think of anything I've done which would make God do this to me." And throughout all this, if you read into Job, he continued to believe that God was in control. He couldn't understand.